Blog Talk Radio.
Today's program pays tribute to African Americans who have blazed trail for freedom in military service and through global ministry and the fight for slavery to end in this United States. Their selflessness and vision prove once again that Black history is American history, both now and in our past. Ellen Craft launched one of the most outrageous and courageous escapes in history. Very fair-skinned, she dressed like a white man with her slave husband, who acted as her darker-skinned valet and traveling companion, to achieve one of the most daring slavery escapes of the 1800s. As first sergeant of the intelligence unit, Michael Wiltz serves as the personal advisor to the commander on all enlisted-related matters, particularly in areas affecting soldier training. He travels the world as an Army officer protecting our country from terrorism. And an international field study trip to Chennai, India, turned into a God-inspired opportunity for Reverend Carla Cooper during her 2003 graduate school years in seminary. That fateful trip has yielded more than 125 Indian churches, now fully a part of the Connectional African Methodist Episcopal Church. Craft, Wiltz, and Cooper, three role models who have helped make America the multicultural mosaic that makes us so unique. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thank you so much for listening to the show, either live or as the one of the archived selections that we have. It is the middle of February. It's snowing a little bit here in the greater Boston area. I am so excited because I'm already packed, leaving for India tomorrow with a group of 22 wonderful men and women from the greater Boston area, Colorado, Michigan, and Connecticut. And we are going to Chennai, also other areas in the Tamil Nadu state of India. And the other state is Andhra Pradesh, which is right next door. So we have a lot that we're going to do in 8 days. I'll tell you all about it when I return. We won't be on the air next week, but in 3 weeks, we will definitely have our Black History Breakfast. I'm excited, and in fact, one of the honorees that I'm paying tribute to today, we will actually honor him in 3 weeks at our Black History Breakfast that will be held here in Boston at the Colonnade Hotel on Thursday, March 3rd. We're actually honoring 24 wonderful men and women, both past and present. It's going to be a very big event. You can find out all about it at mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com. And you can learn how you can sponsor the event and also attend and read all the particulars about the 24 people who we are honoring, including our keynote speaker, Ernest Washington Jr., who is a Vietnam veteran and a Purple Heart recipient. So it's going to be an amazing event. We'd love for you to be there. If not in person, certainly you can be there in spirit. And if you can't be there, you may want to donate a ticket. That's what some people, many people are increasingly doing, where you can contribute and you can be a part of the event and sponsor the actual participation of someone who can't really afford to come, or they're in job transition, or they're a student, or someone who is an emerging leader that you think very highly of, or someone who we can identify for you who can attend the event. You can just go to the website, mssconnect.com, click through to the online registration, and there is a category for donation, and there you can actually donate a ticket. So I'm excited. It's all about Black History. We stretch it into March now because the weather here is somewhat precarious. You never know what's going to happen in February. A little bit more stability in March, so we do have the Black History Breakfast now in March. It is the 23rd breakfast, and we're going to have a great time. So we're going to focus now on three African Americans. We talked last week, and I would encourage you to go back and listen to the archive edition and read about Dr. Carter G. Woodson and why he actually started Black History Month. It's all recorded with last week's segment. You can learn about that. We want to continue our discussion and pull up three more individuals who are just outstanding, two present and one historical one. This woman is a shero in my book. I just can't say enough nice things and powerful things about her and what she did to get her freedom. Sometimes you just can't sit down and lie and take it. You just can't say, well, I'm a slave. There's nothing I can do about it. My husband's a slave. Nothing he can do about it. And so we're just going to live out our lives as slaves, doing nothing about our future. They didn't do that. They decided to take matters into their own hands. And this is what happened. I'm talking about Ellen and William Craft. Ellen was a biracial woman. She ultimately worked on a plantation in Georgia, got married during that time, worked for a family. And typically what happens is during slavery time, you would have one slave. If a daughter got married, you would have slaves that were then given to the daughter and her husband so that they could start their household with kitchen help, et cetera. And this is what happened in the case of Ellen Craft. She actually was moved from her original owner until she was moved to the owner's daughter. She was very fair-skinned, and we do believe she was probably the daughter or the granddaughter of one of the white plantation owners. Well, anyway, she realized that she didn't want to remain a slave her entire life, and I can imagine the kind of planning that went on at night, mostly, between husband and wife. Many of their conversations were monitored. Many times slaves lived in congregate groups so that people would live in not in their own separate homes. They would in their shacks. They would live with other people. I'm not sure what the configuration was with her. But one thing led to another, and she was able to successfully purchase. Again, she was very fair-skinned, so she was able to successfully purchase two tickets. The two tickets she passed on, saying she was buying it for someone else. But then, to just really further make this such a grand story, she decided to dress up like a man. Put makeup on, I'm sure, did what she needed to do, borrowed a hat, probably got all this, and all this was probably in their quarters. Her husband was brown skin, William Craft. He dressed up like her valet or her servant. And to make sure that she would not talk during this escape, she dressed up, and when they bought this train ticket and she boarded the train with a sling, and her hand was in a sling. And so she obviously physically gave the appearance of someone who was not well. And her husband had to do all the talking for her. He was posed as her valet. So they literally boarded a train as a white man traveling with his servant, and they left Georgia and went all the way up first to the Philadelphia area. And just the kind of things that happened were just amazing. And it says here that I'm reading from Smithsonian.com. You can go to today's blog. I actually have the history of all three of our individuals that we're honoring today, and you can go to tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com, go to today's blog, and you can download the history of this great American couple. And it says that they were in Baltimore for their last stop before going to Pennsylvania, which was a free state. Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland was a borderline state. Lots of activities, lots of bounty hunters and slave catchers who were there. And they were going to go on to Philadelphia. And so they had a very particularly vigilant border patrol between Baltimore and between Philadelphia, between Pennsylvania. And Ellen and William were again detained, asked to leave the train and report to the authorities for verification of ownership. And they said, "We shan't let you go," an officer said with finality. "We felt as though we had a deep, that we had come into a deep waters and we were being very much overwhelmed," William recounts in the book, and this is a book that they wrote after the fact. And they returned to the dark, horrible pit of misery, which was slavery, back in Georgia. Ellen and William silently prayed as the officer stood his ground. Suddenly, the jangling of the departure bell shattered the quiet, and the officer, clearly agitated and really angry about this, what he believed to be skeptical people, scratched his head. Surveying the sick traveler's bandages, he said to the clerk, "He is not well. It is a pity to stop him. Tell the conductor to let this gentleman and slave pass." Just amazing. That was the second time they were stopped. And they arrived in Philadelphia the next morning, which was Christmas Day. This was around 1848, around that time. And as they left the station, Ellen burst into tears, crying, "Thank God, William, we're safe." So at that point in Philadelphia, in a free part of the United States, they were free. They were running, obviously. But they didn't stop there. They kept going. They realized that they weren't going to be quite safe in Philadelphia. And so they continued on, and it says, upon their arrival in Philadelphia, Ellen and William were quickly given assistance and lodging by the Underground Abolition Network. If you don't know anything about the Underground Railroad, we'll probably talk about that in coming weeks. That's how a lot of slaves escaped. Either by foot or, in this case, on the train. They were safe houses where these people would go and get refreshed before they would move on with their journey. They realized a reading lesson received a reading lesson their very first day in Philadelphia. And then 3 weeks later, they moved to Boston, where William resumed work as a cabinet maker and Ellen as a seamstress. And then after 2 years, and again this is around 1848, and then by 1850, slave hunters arrived in Boston intent on returning them to Georgia. They were on to them. So the crafts had to pick up and they left again. They first went to Canada and then they went to England. And by that time they remained in England for 20 years, actually. They had 5 children there, and then ultimately in the 1870s came back to Georgia after the Civil War had taken place, and they started a school for freed blacks. It's just an astounding, amazing story that everyone really should know. Again, that's a couple that said, nope, we're not going to take our condition as the finality in our life. They literally took matters in their own hands. They were faith-driven people. And here they narrowly escaped getting caught and sent back to Georgia. Just an incredible story. They wrote a book about it. And so that's the first person I wanted to honor. First Ellen, and then obviously her husband, for what they did and just the remarkable job that they did in history back in the 1840s, way before the Civil War had started. We'll move on and talk about the next person, and that is Michael Wiltz. Michael Wiltz is an amazing military officer. He is also a member of my church when he is actually in the Boston area, but he travels extensively, and he has been in the service for 37 years. First Sergeant Michael Wiltz took over as the detachment sergeant for Detachment 6 on February 21, 2013. Sergeant Wiltz has held a variety of leadership positions throughout his career, ranging from team sergeant to first sergeant. And as first sergeant for an intelligence unit, Wiltz served as the personal advisor to the commander on an established and enlisted related matters detail, particularly in areas affecting soldier training. He devotes the majority of his time training, mentoring, counseling, and sponsoring soldiers and their families. So it sounds to me like a part trainer, part social worker in the military. Wiltz also oversees the daily operations of human intelligence, counterintelligence, and signal intelligent teams within the company while deployed to a theater of operation. And Wiltz, Michael Wiltz, is currently assisting, is the assisting partner nations in Africa in our combined efforts to counter terrorism. He is somewhere now in the world. I don't know where, and some of the work that he does, we can't get details because it's that kind of sensitive nature work, but just an incredible person. The thing I really like about Michael is that when he does come home, he's very unassuming, very, very unassuming, but a very committed person, and he just pitches right in and helps out where he can. He's also a great photographer, and we've had some beautiful pictures because of him. So he is just an all-around very talented person, but clearly dedicating and giving his service to the military and has done so since January of 1980. He was actually born in Los Angeles, California, and he entered the Army there in 1980, and he attended initially. His training was done at Fort Dix in New Jersey. He graduated as a rotary wing repairman at Fort Eustis in Virginia. So he has lots of training that he's taken advantage of. His decorations are amazing. I would encourage you, again, to go to the website. You can download and you can actually click through and read about him and the kind of awards that he has received. His awards and decorations, he also served in the Iraq War several years ago, include the Bronze Star. He's received the Purple Heart, the Meritorious Service Medal, the Army Commendation Medal, that's his fourth award, his Army Achievement Medal, that's his seventh award, Good Conduct Medal, Army Reserve Component Achievement Medal, National Defense Service Medal, and it just goes on and on and on. The Kuwait Liberation Medal by the Government of Kuwait, the Joint Meritorious Unit Commendation, the Meritorious Unit Commendation, that's the third award, the Combat Action Badge, and the Air Assault Badge, the Driver and Mechanic Badge with Driver Wheeled Vehicle Clasp. So this is a highly decorated military officer. I'm going to have great privilege and such excitement really honoring Michael Wiltz at the Black History Breakfast. His wife will be there to accept the award because, again, he is all over the world in active duty, but definitely wanted to pay tribute to him and as a symbol of all of the other officers, all of the other military people, and especially African Americans and people of color. Since this is Black History Month, we just say hats off to First Sergeant Michael Wiltz for the job that you are doing and the incredible opportunities that you have afforded all of us to stay safe and protected because of your military service. The third person that I'd like to honor is someone who I also know, someone who I got to know as a result of my first trip to India in May of 2014. I went to India with members of, I'm a part of the African Methodist Episcopal Church, and I would encourage everybody to go out and get the U.S. postal stamps that are currently being sold by the post office. They're forever stamps, and they are the Richard Allen stamps. You can get them at your local post office. If they don't have them, ask that postal clerk or that manager when they'll get some in or where you can get them, because they are available all over the United States now. And I'm so excited because Richard Allen was the founder of the AME Church. And last week's show paid tribute to him, so you can listen to that archive and learn more about him. So I went on this trip with other AMEs. It was part of the annual conference for this newly formed conference in India. I'd heard a lot about it, didn't know much about it, but wanted to go to India, and it literally has been life-changing for me. While I was there, the wife of the bishop, who was responsible for the creation of the conference, it's now called AME India. He's not the founder, but he actually was responsible for coordinating all the administrative details for that. His wife, Reverend Cecilia Bryant, and this is Bishop John Bryant. I had a very early morning conversation. I actually called her in her hotel room, and she was there as well. And I asked her, "Who is that woman that you said was the founder, the co-founder of this whole initiative here in India?" And she said very forcefully, "Dr. Carla Cooper." Well, it was a name I couldn't forget. So in my hotel room, we had Wi-Fi. It was a great room. I Googled her and came up with a lot of information and thought she was quite interesting, and found out that she was also a member of my sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, and she had actually served as a regional director. Well, I read more, came back home, ended up talking with her on the phone, found out we had much in common. She was just a terrific person, and she gave me the history of how AME India was founded as a direct result of her going to India as a graduate student while she was a graduate student at Eden Theological Seminary. In order for her to graduate from that program, everybody, all the students, had to do foreign international study. They had to go someplace outside of the U.S. and participate in field activities for about a month, either a month or 6 weeks. It depended on the country. And this is such an interesting, wonderful, as we say, a God story, because she first wanted to go to Africa, and that slot had closed. They weren't taking any more students, and they were filled up, and so she couldn't do that. Then she said, okay, India is another place that they're going. So she first put out her queries for that, and that was all also filled up. Then an opening came about where she was able to go to India, but she didn't have her money together. And so she literally had to turn to one of the mentors who was mentoring her, another woman minister, who literally gave her the money, didn't lend, gave her the money to for her airfare and all of the housing costs, et cetera, for her to go. So in a very quick amount of time, short amount of time, she packaged everything together, and she was able to go. And I believe this was in August, in the summertime. She gets to Chennai, where she is going to start and be a part of the Gurukul Lutheran Theological Seminary, which is located in Chennai. That was going to be her exchange program, and she was going to be a part of that particular seminary, and a couple others involved, also the United Theological Seminary in Bangalore. So between Chennai and Bangalore, that's where she was going to be doing her field work. But it was a cultural shock for her, a complete cultural shock. She hadn't been prepared for the number of people, the cultural nuances, the smells, the dynamics, the poverty, and all that make up India. Plus, she was not staying in a Ritz-Carlton hotel. She actually was going to be staying, I believe, with a family member, somebody that they had lined her up with right in the urban area. So this was literally moving her from St. Louis, Missouri area, where she was studying and working, at Eden Theological Seminary, and then thrusting her for more than a month in India. And it was an amazing experience for her. Just the scenes that she saw, the Hindu animal sacrifices that took place, the exorcist sacrifices, the exorcist practices that were done. Again, just a lot of things that you read about in books and you read about in the Bible, literally in living color in India. And it was probably way too much for her and not very pleasant. Well, she made it through. She came home, but while she was there, she befriended one of her classmates who was a dark-skinned Indian. And it'll take way too long for me to explain the color issues, the caste issues that are alive and well in India. Reverend Carla Cooper was matched with Reverend Sarah Abraham. They were paired together because they were the darkest people in the room. That's just how it worked out. They became friends. They exchanged phone numbers. And so when Reverend Carla Cooper came back home, she threw a lot of other stuff away. She just wanted to say, okay, I'm done with India. But for some reason, she hung on to the email address of Reverend Sarah Abraham. Reverend Sarah Abraham and her husband were shepherding about 20 small family churches that wanted a home. They wanted to affiliate first with the Lutheran denomination, but they were going to probably be rejected because the congregants in her small family churches were mostly the lowest of the low in India, called outcasts or Dalits, D-A-L-I-T-S. And because, again, of the social stigma that still goes on in India, they were not going to be welcomed and embraced by the Lutheran denominations in India. And that's when Reverend Carla Cooper started talking about Richard Allen, the founder of the AME Church, who was a slave, who bought his freedom, who pulled himself up by his bootstraps, and who founded the denomination that I am a part of. Well, Reverend Sarah Abraham, her husband, Reverend Abraham Padini, and their congregation began to really resonate and connect with the story of Richard Allen. This is a true story. And it was from that storytelling and that historical connection that one thing led to another, and Reverend Carla Cooper and then ultimately Bishop John Bryant and Reverend Cecilia Bryant were instrumental in these 20 churches becoming a part of the AME Church. Reverend Carla Cooper has now been pastoring for more than 12 years, Quinn Chapel in Lincoln, Nebraska. She is also the chaplain at Doane College and very close to the Padinis, and goes to India every year and has traveled all over India. And had she not gone on that particular trip, who knows what would have happened with those 28 churches and their affiliation with whomever. But we're very, very fortunate that they are now part of our church denomination, and that's why I'm going to India with 22 excited people tomorrow. Actually, four are already in Dubai. We're going to join them. So those are three people, and again, you can go to the websites, read more. Go to AMEIndia.com and read more about AME India, or EmbracingIndia.com. You can listen to an audio track with Carla Cooper telling the story. Well, these are three great Americans, Ellen Craft, Michael Wiltz, and Carla Cooper, overcoming the odds, not taking no as the final answer, not believing that ethnicity was going to limit them, but using them as stepping stones to do greater good in our society. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your week or weekend, and I'll be back in 2 weeks. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. See you later.